This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words aloud, readying information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A hiker is killed by a mountain goat. A horse gets loose on Highway 99, and Kyron Horman's parents are raising funds in a pumpkin patch.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, October 18th, 2010. A 63-year-old hiker died after he was gored by a mountain goat in Washington's Olympia National Park, according to witnesses. The National Park Service say Robert H. Boardman of Port Angeles, Washington, was hurt Saturday as he hiked near the park's Klahani Ridge and died later at Port Angeles Hospital. Note, may not actually be pronounced Klahani. Could be Klahane.
What is a mountain goat is contrasted with, you know, a goat? Don't tell me it lives in the mountains. That's a circular answer and I won't have it. In terms of the actual physiological differences, are there any, or is it just a matter of locale?
I believe there are differences. I think they're bigger. I don't know.
Saying that because it killed a guy?
Possibly.
Okay, fair enough.
I also have no idea. I don't know if your average milk goat could, like, clamber up and down rocky crevasses the same way a mountain goat can.
Is this the thing that the guy that put photos on my Facebook page of? Sorry, that sentence was constructed badly. But
I don't know, Rick.
On the Intertron, if you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson, I think it was Randy, but I might be wrong about that. He put up a whole series of photographs of what looked to be a sort of rocky outcropping, and then I didn't get a chance to read the entire thing, but the intimation was that a man had been killed and there was a goat involved in the equation. It seems like that can't possibly be a coincidence.
No, I'm fairly sure it would have to be the same story.
Is this like a mountain lion thing where they share one name, but that's about it?
Sure. Right. I have no idea.
Okay. Don't screw with nature, really, is the moral of the story here.
Yeah. Boardman, his wife and a friend of theirs had gone for a day hike on the Switchback Trail about 17 miles south of Port Angeles. They had stopped for lunch at an overlook when a goat appeared and moved toward them. Apparently, the goat began behaving aggressively.
Don't taunt the goat.
At which point Boardman urged his wife and their friend to leave the scene. Then Boardman, an experienced hiker, tried to carefully shoo the goat away. But the goat attacked him, goring him in the thigh. And then the goat stayed standing over him as he lay on the ground bleeding.
Mocking his pleas for mercy, no doubt.
Bill Backus, an off-duty park ranger who was on the trail hiking, moved forward with a safety blanket and shook it to try to scare the goat away. He also pelted it with rocks, and after what seemed, he said, like a very long time, it moved away, but it still stayed close.
Am I to understand that the guy who was attacked by a goat was... there was an attempted rescue by a guy named Backus?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. Just yes. One horned creature facing off against another. By the way, here's a little FYI for me to, you know, everybody who may intersect with Mother Nature. Wild animals don't really understand the concept of, quote, shooing. That seems to be a little bit of... that's a domesticated trait. I would say that you're going to have very negligible luck trying to shoo a wild animal away from you. It's like hinting. Or giving a stern look, or maybe arching an eyebrow in a sort of a reproachful fashion.
Speaking to it sarcastically.
Yeah, that's, your wry, glib witticisms are going to have almost no impact, I would think, on the animal's desire to kill you.
Oh, look who's a goat. Oh, sure, I think you should stay around all day.
What are you going to do with them horns, huh?
Park rangers called the Coast Guard while Backus' wife began CPR. After receiving the call, a Coast Guard helicopter flew in, picked him up, and went to take him to the hospital. They attempted to administer electric shock in attempt to revive him.
Just to cheer him up.
He had no pulse.
All right.
So about an hour after the attack, rangers were able to locate the ram, which is about 8 or 9 years old, and had been earlier identified by park rangers as acting aggressively previously.
All right. And the goat had caused trouble before.
They identified the animal after seeing blood on it, then shot and killed it.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us today. It is Monday, October 18th, 2010. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Still to come this hour, we have Science on the March. Also, your entertainment news today. Coming up later on, the Rick Emerson Show will take the airwaves at 1 p.m. Don't forget, you can get this program, Legion of News, right here live every weekday from noon until 1 p.m. Also via iTunes. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And last but certainly not least, on your handheld device, and that is mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E, at Cascadia.fm, which has a sort of pleasing cadence to it. Here is Don Taylor.
A horse got loose from its pasture and wandered onto Highway 99, causing several crashes. Two people were hospitalized with minor injuries, and the horse died, according to the Oregon State Police Troopers. Police said the horse left a nearby pasture around 10:15 p.m. Friday and onto Highway 99 near Junction City. Soon after, Jackie Gentry, 59, of Harrisburg...
Little Jackie Gentry!
...struck the horse with his 1988 Pontiac.
You get away from that horse!
Then a second car, driven by a 39-year-old Eugene woman, avoided hitting the horse and pulled over to help the first car. As she helped, a 17-year-old teenager hit the horse, flipping his Ford pickup truck onto its side...
And into the house that Jack built.
...and striking the woman's car that was pulled over.
Okay.
So anyway, the horse died after being struck twice.
I like
by
to think
cars.
That the horse, though, in its final moments, thought to itself that, you know, that at the very least, I mean, at the bare minimum, it was able to take down three members of its hated oppressive race. You know, I mean,
you are going down with me.
Yeah, yeah. Any number of examples of its much hated enslaver, you know, they were able to be dealt with appropriately. This is Legion of News. This is Don Taylor.
The Tea Party Express begins another bus tour today, starting in Harry Reid's home state of Nevada. Chairwoman Amy Creamer says it's all about the economy.
People are voting on the economy. We're not focused on social issues. And that's what is important to people right now, is getting our economy back in shape.
Okay, that's nice. It's a lie. I mean, you know, as we expected it would be. But it's a nice thing to say. It's a nice thing that you can rock yourself to sleep with in the evening.
In the Senate races, the Kentucky and Nevada candidates are polling slightly ahead, while the Delaware Senate and New York governor's candidates are way behind. Tea Party Express Chairwoman Amy Creamer, who we spoke to recently, says they haven't given up any hope for any of the other candidates.
Look at Scott Brown in Massachusetts, and everybody said there was no way he could win that seat because it was a Democratic seat in a blue state, a very liberal state, and there's no way a Republican could take that seat. And look what happened.
By the way, the best part of the entire campaign season, well, there's two things. One is, what's her name, Nutcase Christine O'Donnell and her whole don't masturbate, I worship Satan thing. The second thing is that that moment in the Nevada debate where his female opponent told Harry Reid to man up, which is just the best thing ever. I mean, it's just, he looked like somebody had reached in and pulled out his pancreas, like with their bare hands. I don't think anybody really told him what he was in for, or he's just one of those guys that has just had the gig for so long, and he's just become such an irrevocably ensconced part of the government that he's forgotten what it's actually like to have to go out and you know, and sort of, you know, fight to keep his nonsense job. Yeah, and so in the debate, the woman just says, "Oh, come on, man up, Harry." And he looked like somebody had just pulled out his teeth. It was awesome. Aww. Here is Don Taylor.
While thousands of people packed the Roloff farm in Helvetia Saturday to search for the perfect pumpkin, Kane Horman and Desiree Young continued the search for their missing son. Kyron Horman disappeared from Skyline School on June 4th. His parents hoped to raise awareness about their missing son and to raise money for search efforts. Amid pumpkins and petting zoos, there was a booth selling Kyron t-shirts, dog tags, and posters. There was also a booth for families to create child identification kits.
Look, I'm no economic genius or nothing, but it seems like maybe just a bucket that said, "Give us some money so we can find Kyron," might have been more well advised. And I'm not trying to be cynical about this. It really is just, this is just a matter of dollars and cents. First of all, let me rephrase this statement. Nobody who isn't eventually going to be arrested for something else in the future is going to wear a Kyron Horman shirt around town. It's not like you're just going to wear that to the mall, you know, like you're going to the Cajun Grill with your fat family and decide to wear a Kyron Horman shirt, you know, just to, like, lighten up the mood a little bit. It's not a thing you're going to wear on a date. You're not going to wear it to a church social or to an icebreaker or to an office party of some kind.
Yeah, but think about it, though. It might be worth buying one now and just putting it away, and, like, in 5 or 10 years you can pull it out and start wearing it then, ironically.
I'll let you get right on that. You can be the trendsetter. You be the trailblazer.
The problem is those t-shirts are all white. They need a black shirt.
This just seems like they're going to end up with a box of t-shirts sitting in the garage. And then what can you do? Then it's like you can't throw them out because then you feel like a jackass. It seems wrong to throw out Kyron Horman shirts. So then you're just like schlepping them around, just lugging them from state to state, house to house.
Actually, in the TV movie, that will be the scene that indicates that Kane Harmon has finally realized that his son is never returning, is when he goes into the garage and he pulls out the box of t-shirts and sets them out next to the trash can.
Burns them for sweet, sweet warmth. Here is Don Taylor.
This is the pumpkin patch, by the way, owned by the Roloff family.
Yes.
Of big world, little tiny people with pumpkins, or whatever the hell that show is called. The family was very familiar with the pumpkin patch, the Hormans. They had taken Kyron pumpkin picking there in years past. Desiree said he loves little pumpkins. Kyron loves to come and pick out just the right pumpkin, just the right size. So we got one for him today, and we're going to put it out at the Wall of Hope.
Has anybody really? Is it still called the Wall of Hope?
Yeah.
All right.
This is one of the stories I can't talk about because anything I say, I will sound like such a colossal asshole.
Okay. Should I just sit quietly until you're done, or?
No, please.
Okay.
Sure.
No, I was going to say something amusing, but that's okay. It's all right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, the Kitzhaber campaign has confirmed President Barack Obama's trip to Oregon on Wednesday the 20th. Time and location to be announced when plans are finalized. They keep saying time and location to be announced when plans are finalized, and then they always follow it by saying the event's scheduled for the Oregon Convention Center at 4 p.m.
Is that this Wednesday?
Yes.
All right.
Kitzhaber is facing a tight race against political newcomer and former trailblazer Chris Dudley. On Wednesday, Obama was in New Jersey to ask wealthy donors to help him close the enthusiasm gap with Republicans 4 weeks ahead of the midterm elections. He said supporters should stay focused on the long game and chided them not to start sulking about Democrats' problems.
Buck up.
Obama made his comments at a Democratic National Committee fundraiser in the New Jersey home of Michael Kempner, head of MWW Group, a public relations firm. The event was expected to raise $1 million, with 50 guests paying $30,400 each. The event coming this week is free and open to the public, but registration is required. For security reasons, if you're planning on going, do not bring bags to the rally if you can avoid it. You should expect airport-like security. They are also saying no signs, banners, or laptops.
This is going to be like one of those things at the Times Square for New Year's Eve, where they let everybody in, and I think you have to get in at like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning or something, because they start closing the subway. They start closing the subways, and you can't get in or out of the area. And so as a result, they tell everybody you got to get there like 13 hours ahead of time. Yet at the same time, they won't let you bring in beverages or liquids. And also, if you leave, you can't get back in, but there are no toilets. Which, so you've got you know, like 5 million people or something that scratch, you know, they just pack themselves into this tiny little area, just like scratching and clawing to get in there. But they're not allowed to whiz for the remainder of the day, and no one ever just asks. The entire time I've been watching the New York Times or the New York Times Square thing happen, nobody's ever just said, well, like, where is all the whiz going? What are people doing when they have to use the bathroom? Oh. It's like a 3 million person murder on the Orient Express. You know, where they're all guilty, and so they all remain innocent by being quiet.
Well, it always looked like a horrible nightmare to me anyway, just being packed in with all of those people and not able to escape. But no, now it sounds even worse. By the way, the clanking and metallic sounds that you hear in the background are Rick Emerson apparently removing and then putting the bass back on.
Not really removing it. I'm just attempting to fix this.
Okay.
Our equipment was removed from the studio last night and then replaced. So and this apparently was removed as well. So I'm endeavoring to fix that.
Kind of amusing to watch you with the mic stand in one hand and the giant weight in the other. I'm enjoying that. The Pentagon has been combing its databases for potentially inflammatory material that could go public when WikiLeaks releases more than 400,000 classified documents from the Iraqi war, which may happen as soon as this week. The leak comes 3 months after the whistleblowing site published 92,000 confidential Afghan war documents, currently the largest leak in U.S. military history, teaming up with the New York Times, The Guardian, and Germany's Der Spiegel to coordinate the archive's release. Newsweek reports that WikiLeaks will partner with the same outlets for the Iraq document dump, and Wired magazine adds that founder Julian Assange secretly handed the documents over to the organizations last August. In response, the Pentagon has assembled a 120-person task force to go through records and determine what the possible impacts might be. The leak comes in the wake of sexual harassment charges against Assange and during an especially tense period for the organization. The site has been down for more than 2 weeks due to, quote, scheduled maintenance. And last month, the company was hit with a wave of resignations after a number of former staffers expressed concern that the October deadline wouldn't allow them enough time to redact sensitive information.
You want to talk about something that's a lie? The phrase scheduled maintenance outage is always a lie. That just means that they've irritated the wrong person at 4chan. That's always what that means. And the thing with WikiLeaks, you know, whatever, I don't care. It's not like I'm leaking any information, but you don't want to screw with the Pentagon, man. You leak information about the war effort, and it's like, I don't care if he's 170 years old. It's like G. Gordon Liddy will be hiding in your mailbox, and he will put an ice pick through your eye when you go down to pick up the Sunday paper. They play on the fastest track there is there, and I don't think they have any compunction about it. Christ, I mean, I think it was when we were talking to Michael Schaub from Bookslut, and he was talking about that poisoning the well, which is the story about the Pentagon Papers and Jack Anderson, and how at one point there are these insane on-the-record conversations where the Nixon White House was talking about covering Jack Anderson's steering wheel with LSD so that he would lose control at a high velocity, you know, and wrap himself around a telephone pole somewhere near the Potomac. So, you know, anything that ends in Pentagon, that's an organization that I just I leave well enough alone there.
Well, and honestly, when you read that WikiLeaks is doing this, they're releasing all of these documents and sending them to the New York Times and all these and the Guardian and what have you, and then you hear, oh yeah, and you know the head of the company was hit with sexual harassment charges, and you kind of think, wow, that was the best they could come up with. They couldn't just couldn't suddenly be arrested for embezzlement.
Well, you don't want to lead with your right. You can't accuse him of convicting, you know, you can't nail him with the hard stuff right away. You start with sexual harassment, and then
they couldn't get the kiddie porn on his computer enough.
You build up to the he killed Christ later on. Still to come this hour is Science on the March. Also, entertainment news. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Authorities say two post office workers have been killed in a shooting at a post office in West Tennessee this morning. The Lauderdale County Sheriff's Department said two female employees were killed but couldn't provide information about suspects or motive. Tennessee Bureau of Investigation spokeswoman Kristen Helm said her agency was sending investigators to the scene in Henning, about 45 miles northeast of Memphis. They confirmed the two people had been killed but did not provide details about their identities. A spokeswoman for the U.S. Postal Service said there had been an incident at the post office but didn't have firmer details. Henning, about 45 miles northeast of Memphis, was the hometown of Roots author Alex Haley.
By the way, if you want to see the best photograph ever, and this is courtesy of our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. And there is a photo there, and I can't remember exactly where it was that she got this. It was in some town not too far from here. I want to say it was, you know, one of those, like, sort of Washtuckna-style towns. Let's see, what have we got here? Ah, Roseburg. So this is a store in Roseburg, and this is why Cheryl's great. She actually took a photo of this. She pulled off the side of the road and made sure to photograph this and send it to me. You go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. It's in my wall photos. It is, in fact, quote, your friendly neighborhood shopping center, or I'm sorry, shipping center, but it's like a mailboxes, etc. And it is, in fact, called Goin' Postal. And this is not like a made-up business. It's not a fake business. It's not like a thing somebody bought at a gag gift store and they put it up like, hey, we'll screw with Harry's Bagel Shop. We'll call it Goin' Postal. And it's got a flag on the front, and it is Goin', by the way, G-O-I-N apostrophe, then with the flag, and then it's with this weird sort of italicized font. I do like the idea that they specify in the name and in the sign that it's your friendly neighborhood shipping center, even though the name of the business itself comes from the phenomenon of postal workers, you know, killing a guy.
Yeah.
So you go check that out. That's their contribution to the American lexicon, ladies and gentlemen. It's that that phrase right there. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up at 1 o'clock, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Still to come this hour, science on the march and entertainment news. I'm going to give you a phone number right now, and you may not need it. You may not have a use for it. It may have no purpose at this very moment in your life. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for you. Now, here's the thing. Your luck's not going to last forever. There will come a time when you need this phone number. It's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That is the number for the cleaning solution. That is the business run by Mr. Michael Beatty, who's a longtime listener of ours. He is, in fact, the first sponsor to come on board here with Legion of News. And the cleaning solution will come to your home. They'll come to your business, your office, wherever it might be. And here's the thing about your carpet or linoleum or tile or whatever. You don't always see it, by which I mean it's just not directly in front of you. I mean, well, it sort of is, but it's on the ground. It's not at eye level. So you can actually go days, weeks, months, years. You don't really realize, just this sort of weird, threaded in sort of the grime that you're getting there, where your shoes are just kind of tromping dirt into the ground, and you look down and suddenly the carpet is sort of an interesting new shade called Hint of Dirt, which you don't want. So here's the thing. You can actually talk to him about putting you on a maintenance program. And we've discussed coming to your house after some part, sort of a party or a shindig or a hootenanny or whatever, and trying to get things de-stained and back to the way they looked before all of the nonsense happened. But, you can actually skip the middleman and just have him put you on a maintenance program like right out of the gate, which means he's going to come every so often and make sure that whatever it is your feet are walking on in the house continues to look good and continues to look like it is the day you bought it. So you don't have to worry about some emergency cleanup, the day after. And, it's cheaper in the long run anyway. So you write this number down, 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty, he's the owner and operator of The Cleaning Solution. This is Don Taylor.
It's time for science news.
Here's your science on the march for Monday.
New research is finding women's behavior shifts not just during their premenstrual cycle or menopause, but also during ovulation. Two new studies in the November issue of the journal Evolution and Human Behavior find that women get a little wilder during their most fertile days of the month. One study found that fertile women are more open to the idea of hooking up with a stranger or acquaintance, while the second found that women with less masculine-looking partners are more likely to lust after strong-jawed men during fertile days than women with partners with manly husbands.
Are these studies just done so a bunch of chicks in a lab have an excuse to go hump construction workers? I mean, that's really what this is all about.
Quite possibly.
I mean, which is fine, don't get me wrong. That's a fine application of anything, not just science. But I mean, if they would just sort of... I would just like, even if they want to do it privately, just admit to me that that's really the reason for all of this. Just like Kinsey liked to watch people spank it in a lab. I mean, fine, whatever, some guys golf. I'm just saying, just cop to it.
The new studies are two of more than 20 that have examined the effects of ovulation on the way women dress, talk, and think.
I thought that was a myth.
Apparently not, Rick Emerson.
I thought that was, no pun intended, a broad generalization, that that this did not, in fact, have an effect on the way that women behaved.
Well, until about a decade ago, most research on the menstrual cycle focused on PMS, which occurs after ovulation but before menstruation. Few people had investigated whether ovulation actually affected women. One reason no one had tackled the question is that researchers in human evolution had long assumed that ovulation didn't matter much in humans. Unlike other mammals, which go into heat during fertile periods, women can be up for sex at any time of the month. Evolutionary theorists have tried several explanations for the loss of this estrous cycle in humans, one of the most common being that humans lost the heat phase to conceal ovulation.
Yeah, that's totally why it is, because if you know when a chick is likely to get pregnant, you're less likely to knock her up. And so that is exactly what that's about, because if a guy was able to tell, because look, when a guy knows that you're likely to get pregnant now, like if you say, hey, should I get a rubber? And you go, no, it'll feel fine. It'll feel better without one. And the guy says, okay, I gotta go get some laundry out of the car. I'll be back.
And if you had that green light on your forehead that said ovulating, they would just like, no, I'm going to go watch TV now.
So, I mean, that's why guys look for, I mean, this is, you know, you're venturing into the realm of bad stand-up comedy now, but that, because women, unlike other animals, do not have physically visible signs that they're ovulating, that's why guys are reduced to looking at things like, you know, how many kids do you have already? Do you have a boyfriend in prison? Are you going to see Kid Rock when he comes to town next month? All of these things indicate that you probably want to get pregnant and almost will assuredly get pregnant at like the drop of a hat or perhaps a pair of pants. So, but that's, we've had to develop these extrasensory techniques, Don, because of the cunning female ability to hide this.
And according to science, men may not be aware of it, but apparently they are able to tell when women are ovulating, even if they don't really realize it. No one knows how men can tell. One hypothesis is smell, that there might be a change in smell. But several studies found women report that men become more attentive and jealous around fertile days. One study in 2006 found that when women were fertile, their male partners saw other men as a greater threat to their dominance. So apparently it turns out that women do actually have a heat phase. It just works very differently than in other mammals. So there you go. Military medical researchers are hopeful they've come up with a blood test that can tell if someone has suffered a concussion or other mild brain injuries. Colonel Dallas Hack says early trials show this method really works.
100% accurate so far in the mild brain injury patients, as well as the more moderate and severe.
It sounds like you suffered some sort of injury halfway through the soundbite. So a concussion is what? It's the brain hits against the inside of your skull.
Yeah,
is that the deal?
Yeah. All right,
so it bruises your brain.
Yes.
All right.
Colonel and Dr. Dallas Hack explains how it works.
When the brain cells are damaged, they spill their contents into the fluid around the brain.
Do not want.
The brain, and that then gets into the bloodstream, and we can now measure those in the bloodstream.
I don't want to think about my precious knowledge being spilled into the fluid inside my head. It's like losing my precious essence. It's a thing I don't want to risk.
Well, your brain really is just kind of like a soft, spongy, gooey thing that's floating around inside a hard candy shell. So, you know, it's really actually pretty amazing that people don't suffer concussions more often.
Well, but that you got the whole spongy layer between your skull and your brain, though, to keep it, you know, it's like a sort of liquid packing peanut or something. But so this is where they're going to test it with blood samples, because the way they do it now is what they shine the. Is that jazz where they shine the flashlight in your eye or something? Which I never know what that means. It's like I can never. Like,
well, they're looking to see if your pupils expand and contract,
but
normally.
Yeah, but it's like I can, you know, because I remember there was I was playing soccer or something when I was a kid. We were out doing some damn thing at recess. By the way, on the same playground where I bit clean through my tongue when I was about 7, and that's a story for another time. But you know, some kid got whacked in the head with something, or like he. I don't know. He ran into one of the goalposts like a moron. And, you know, the teachers are rushing out there with one of those flashlights going like, put him on his... Let me shine a flashlight in his eyes. And then, of course, the debate ensues about, well, what are your eyes supposed to do if you have a concussion? What aren't they supposed to do? And it's like that thing of, you know, like if your drugs do... Your eyes do one thing, you're on a specific kind of drug. And if they do something else, you know, you're on another kind of... But no one really remembers that.
I was knocked unconscious at school, both in kindergarten and the first grade.
Were you just unpopular?
Yes.
Did you talk back?
Well, no. In the first one in kindergarten, the third graders every year would make a. They studied the Hopi Indians, and they would make a Hopi Indian adobe house thing, and all the other students would come in and examine it and do it, and we would all climb up the ladder to the top, and then our principal, Virginia Gerling, I don't know why I remember her name, but she was helping us all down, and for some reason I decided I just wanted to jump and not be helped, and I landed on my forehead on the concrete floor. So that was the first one. And I still have a little nodule on my head, a bump. And then a year later, I was playing on the playground, and I went around one side. We were all running around, and I went around one side of a post, and I just collided forehead first with Pete Zimmerman and just went bam and went down like a sack of rocks.
All right. Maybe not so much the playground activity for you. That's one of those things where you look back and you realize you're lucky just to not be taking all your meals through a straw at like at the home somewhere.
I always assume this is why I can't do math.
Okay. Well, perhaps. I mean, you know, it's entirely possible that nature just knew something that we didn't early on. You know, there's something we weren't, something that maybe nobody likes to speak aloud, the shame that dare not voice its name. You know, but there was...
I think that evolution was trying to weed me out.
Trying to remove you from the game as early as possible, you know? Because, you know, nature doesn't necessarily know who's going to grow up and have, 17 hapless kids of their own. So, you know, nature does what it does. It just tries to take out the trash, you know, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, if necessary.
Did you just call me trash?
No, figuratively speaking. Here's Don Taylor.
Three people were killed in the Philippines this weekend as Super Typhoon Meggy. Made landfall, prompting authorities to declare a state of calamity. Meggy, also known locally as Juan, is the strongest typhoon to hit the region this year and has left many parts of the country without power or access to transportation. Thousands of military reservists were on standby to deal with the storm's fallout, and retired Army Major General Benito Ramos compared the effort to preparing for war. This was tougher because in war, I could take a nap, he said.
Really? Is that the difference there between between nature and war? Is that you can actually sleep your way through vast sections of a war?
All right. Apparently so.
Okay.
Heavy flooding has also struck Vietnam, which reported 27 casualties and an additional 20 after a bus was swept into a flooded river. And Thailand, which evacuated 100 elephants in anticipation of the storm.
Do you ever think that there are certain countries, you know, this is not unlike the nature trying to remove you from the gene pool by just tossing you off the playground slide or whatever and you were five. Do you think there's certain countries that are really being given very strong messages that, you know, everybody ought to move somewhere else?
Yeah, nature seems to slap Thailand and the Philippines around quite a lot.
It's not even really just nature. I mean, if you're living in Vietnam at this point, you've got to ask yourself, really, wouldn't you be better off almost anywhere else on planet Earth? I mean, just floating on an abandoned door in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It seems like you're probably going to avoid any number of things that happen on an almost daily basis in that part of the world. I'm just saying.
You know, it is a beautiful, beautiful country.
Well, it would have to be, because otherwise, like, what? I mean, really, what with the Agent Orange and the firebombings and the death and the, and the dengue fever.
And the hurricanes.
It doesn't really seem like the longevity has a lot to recommend it there. So I would imagine there's got to be some kind of up factor, sort of like a really hot-looking Typhoid Mary or something.
President Obama has honored winners of science, technology, and math competitions from across the country. During a White House ceremony today, the president also announced he will have a walk-on role coming up on Discovery Channel's Mythbusters program in December.
Awesome.
I can announce today that I taped a special guest appearance for their show, although I didn't get to blow anything up. I was a little frustrated with that.
Did you hear the people go, ooh, when he said that?
That's okay. He has Afghanistan for that.
The president says he also invites pro and college teams that win championships to the White House.
When you win first place at a science fair, nobody's rushing the field or dumping Gatorade over your head. But in many ways, our future depends on what happens in those contests.
He should totally give them a nipple twist when they come into the office, just to make them feel at home. You
a
know
wedgie?
What I mean? Yeah. You know, and just to give them like a long, painful nookie.
Would you like to see the Oval Office's private bathroom? And then he just shoves their head in the toilet?
I think, you know, and it's it is easy to be sort of reflexively, sarcastic about these things or whatever, but I think that's kind of badass, actually.
Yeah.
You really can't imagine. There's just so many cheap jokes here. I'm not even going to. But you can't imagine that George Bush or somebody going on MythBusters. You just can't. I mean, not only because he was clearly just a clod, but also because he was like so into this whole like I'm a fake Texan working man kind of thing that there was no way he was going to allow himself to be photographed near like a book or anybody who would ever own one or read one. Or comprehend the contents of one. And I think it's kind of awesome that a Barack Obama would go on MythBusters. And I think that they ought to do, like, with the guys who win the science fairs or, like, mathletes or whatever, he ought to totally have mathletes where it's like they just get together on the front lawn and then they just go out and they just drink and they just cruise for chicks. You know? And it's like President Obama and the science team guy and also, the guy who just, beat Deep Blue in the chess contest. They're all going to go out and they're going to get wasted later. It's going to be awesome.
Of course, now, you know, he's going to be on MythBusters, so he's just like one step now away from hanging out with Will Wheaton.
Yeah, but I mean, but how much cooler would that be, too? Because here's the thing, you get in with the MythBusters guys and the Will Wheaton guys, then that puts you many, many degrees closer to everybody at you know, at Diebold. And then you know, the next time you might not even need elections, really. I mean, you know, one vote, you're in, baby, with a plurality. Here's Don Taylor.
That is all of our science.
All right, fantastic. There is your science news for Monday, right here at Legion of News. Fantastic. Science news brought to you by a brand new business partner, that is Squires Electric. You find out more about them at squireselectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They've been here for over a decade, and they are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. And I think it was on this show, or it might have been on the Rick Emerson show, we were talking about the when you take, I don't know, whatever it is. There's that whole thing of like, there's like an apprentice and journeyman and master, you know, and then whatever, you know, all the levels, you know, it's like passing the bar to where you become somebody who is officially sanctioned and signed off on by all the proper governmental authorities to come to your house and just be screwing around with wiring. Because if beginning, which is, it's amazing to think actually that you don't need to have any sort of, you know, like approval from the state to do that yourself, you know? Like if I was just going to go over to your house and charge you to be just rewiring stuff, I mean, the state would just say, well, no, you can't do that because you will almost assuredly kill yourself or somebody else. You're set fire to things, or you'll just be there wasting everybody's time. So you got to go take a class and you got to do a thing and you got to pass a test, which 97% of people fail, by the way. And yet you can just sit there and just disassemble the wiring in your own home, which seems spectacularly ill-advised for most people.
But, although you can do it, but at the same time, if you try to sell your house later or something and you have a proper inspection, someone may say, you know, this is all wrong.
Well, it's like that.
Can't sell this house now.
Like the one time I tried to put in a car stereo by myself, and it was just, you know, I ended up, this is totally true, I ended up just taking, like, massive amount. Did you ever try to put in a car stereo, and you end up with wires that are just going to nowhere? And it's like, not only can you not find where they end and where they're supposed to plug in, like you can't find where they begin. They appear to just come into existence out of a singularity, like halfway past your dashboard. Where you're looking down, you're going, okay, well, this is striped orange and black. Okay, so then this is, wait, but then this is green. Well, what the hell is this wire even? And then you're asking yourself, well, what is this grounding wire even for? And you realize, you don't really know what a grounding wire is for. If you'd paid more attention in technology class or something, or whatever the equivalent the course was at your school, you might know, but you didn't. You were trying to figure out how to make a birdhouse that could double as a bong when nobody was looking or something. You shouldn't be allowed near anything, is my point. So write down this number instead, 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. And you know that thing I mentioned earlier, that test, like 97% of people did fail? Joe Squires passed it first time. Squires Electric, been here for more than a decade. They do free estimates. And, of course, no job too large and no job too minuscule. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric. Here's Don Taylor.
A Kentucky woman who was told by doctors that she would never have children because of her size celebrated her daughter's birthday this weekend. Family members say Stacy Harold is the world's smallest living mother, and the Guinness Book of World Records agrees. Harold is the mother of three and is 28 and a half inches tall. When her then-youngest child, Micaiah, was born in late 2008, the girl was only 10 inches shorter than her mother.
Well, you said she's 28 inches tall. What was the figure before that?
She's the world's smallest living mother.
Was there a number, though, before the 28 inches tall?
No.
Okay. So
she has three children.
Okay. All right. So she has, but are they, mean, are the kids, but are the kids properly sized?
Well, that's the thing. They said she's 28 and a half inches tall. When her youngest child was born in late 2008, the baby was only 10 inches shorter than her mother.
But wouldn't that, I mean, I don't mean to be horrible here, but wouldn't there be a lot of cracking involved?
I can't imagine that. I imagine it would be.
Or is that a cut you open and get the baby kind of thing?
Even more unpleasant than childbirth normally is.
I mean, is that where they get the can opener and they
maybe
right at the front or something? Because otherwise it just seems like that's a thing. Your pelvis will just be dust. You know,
yeah.
you don't want to do that. You might as well just have your pelvis removed at that point and just be gelatinous.
On Sunday, the family celebrated their 4-year-old daughter Katira's birthday. Harold said Katira was born with the same genetic disorder she has, osteogenesis imperfect type 3. Doctor said it's a rare bone disorder. Her family said that while Katara may not grow tall, the laughs and love they share cannot be measured.
Oh, I'm sure the children in the orphanages are laughing right now.
Makaya, now almost two, does not have the disease. The latest baby, Malachi, may or may not have it. You know?
Remember, kids are just like going to Vegas. You know, it's sort of like a fleshy, it's like a fleshy roulette wheel, you know, that you can play in the privacy of your own home. Maybe our kid will have our same crippling disease. Maybe he won't. I guess we better F until we find out and then do it again.
Yes. Harold's husband, Will Harold, said they're trying to say that he may have the disease, but I shrug them off. It's something that God has given us.
Seriously,
three little miracles that we're urged to share.
I ever see you, I'm going to beat you with a chair. I'm going to beat you with a chair until you can't stand anymore, freak. All right. That's it. It's a private message for me. The guy got to be horsewhipped. Seriously. Him and his minuscule wife. All right. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, and you know it's true, by the way. I mean, seriously, who says, like...
A man should be horsewhipped, him and his minuscule wife.
And you know what? You probably get away, one whip, no waiting, because they're tiny. So, I mean...
You could use one of those, the kind of whip you use on Shetland ponies.
Exactly. Just get some sort of nefarious Billy Barty type to go over and just work him over. Some sort of miniature enforcer.
That guy from Eastbound and Down.
Exactly. I'm here about the VIG. Anyway, I don't, whatever. This is like your thing with Kyron Horman earlier.
Yeah.
When I start talking about people having kids, I mean, seriously, just because you've got junk doesn't mean you have to use it all the time. And just because you use it, it's not like a law that every time you have the sex, you have to have a baby. It's not required or anything.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to think less of you if you just decide to go get a kid at the baby store or whatever. You just walk and go, hey, I'll take that one there in the third row.
Yeah. I have this rare bone disorder, and it's genetic, and so maybe I could pass it on to someone else, but I'd like to have a kid. Maybe I should adopt one.
No, that's just foolish.
An existing child who needs a home, perhaps.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do a little entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday.
Celine Dion has been admitted to a Florida hospital to prevent the early delivery of her twins. The superstar singer is at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach, Florida. The hospital said in a statement the admission was recommended to make sure she's near her doctors leading up to the baby's birth. Her rep said she is due to deliver the twins early this month. Dion said earlier this year that she's pregnant with two boys. She's tried for years to have more children. She and her husband, Rene Angelil, are the parents of a 9-year-old son, Rene Charles.
And so this is because the kids are, what are they, so desperately trying to escape life with Celine that they're afraid that if she takes a nap, they're going to make a break for it out of her vagina or something?
They're probably very hungry.
Yeah, I would imagine. Here's the thing about Celine Dion. Is that, I mean, I don't dislike Celine Dion the way that, everybody sort of seems to dislike her, but it's like, to me, there's not even enough there to dislike. I mean, she's a person, Celine Dion is a woman, both as a singer, because, she can sing, but as a person and as a talent, she's entirely without flavor. She's like some musical albino. There's just, she is totally odorless and tasteless to me in every way.
I like Celine Dion only because I don't listen to her music at all and don't give a damn about that. The only thing I like about Celine Dion is that she is just bat poop crazy. She is just nuts. And you only really see it if you ever get a chance to see her interviewed. Because she's one of those, she's been in show business since she was a little girl. So she's one of those kind of, maybe not quite Michael Jackson crazy, but just like, doesn't have any connection to like normal real life
right.
at all, and she is the center of her universe always, and she's crazy, she's completely nuts, and it's kind of endearing really because I just find that sort of awesome.
I guess
she's nuts.
My whole thing is that I don't quite get how it is that she became famous because there's nothing distinct about her whatsoever. I'm not saying everything has to be to everybody's taste, but there's nothing about her that stands out to me as unique.
She does really actually have a phenomenal voice. She has a phenomenal instrument. It's just that what she does with it is really not particularly interesting, to me personally, musically. I just don't like the music that she does.
It's just like listening to a bowl of vanilla pudding sing. That's sort of what it sounds like to me. It's like a bowl of overcooked farina, if you were to mic it really closely.
Well, speaking of crazy and famous, a Georgia woman whose 15-year-old daughter appeared on an episode of Tyra Banks' talk show featuring teen sex addicts is suing Tyra Banks for $3 million. In a lawsuit filed October 8th in a federal court in Atlanta, Beverly McClendon says her daughter appeared on the former model's talk show without her parents' permission. Banks, Warner Brothers Entertainment, and the producers of the show are named as defendants. A spokesman for Warner Brothers said Sunday the company has no comment. The lawsuit claims violation of privacy and negligence. It asks for $3 million in damages and seeks to keep the episode from ever being aired.
So how did the kid even get there? Did you see if she was going to 7-Eleven or something and then sort of nipped off to the show to appear? That's the sort of thing that you would think they would have to get somebody to sign off on it, just because you figure in a post, Jenny Jones or whatever world, you know, that they would just be afraid of being sued into oblivion.
Well, she's a 15-year-old sex addict, so she's probably very, very good at lying to her parents about where she is and what she's doing.
Well, that's a fair point. I would imagine if you're running a daytime talk show, though, you're probably keenly aware that the people you're dealing with are crazy and therefore probably come from a long family line of crazy. And crazy people love to sue. Crazy people love to cause a ruckus. So wasn't it Jenny Jones where it's like the guy got shotgunned to death on his front porch? And then there was something else. What's the other thing? There was another thing that was not too far off from that. It wasn't Jerry Springer. It was a show like that. There was, you know, something horrific happened. And then the next thing, you know, lawyers are on the phone. So, all right. But it hasn't aired yet.
No.
All right. Okay.
Well, I don't think so.
All right.
It's said from ever being aired again. I think it did air. It did air once.
All right.
Actress Barbara Billingsley, who played June Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver, died Saturday after a long illness at her Santa Monica, California home. She was every bit as nurturing, classy, and lovely as June Cleaver, and we were proud to share her with the world, said the 94-year-old son, Glenn Billingsley, to the Associated Press. Actor Tony Dow, of Leave It to Beaver, said, "America's favorite mother is now gone. I feel very fortunate to have been her son for 11 years. We were wonderful friends, and I will miss her very much."
Is it Tony Dow that he's not the one who's a cop? That's what's his name? That's Ken Osmond.
Yeah.
Eddie Haskell. What is it? Tony Dow ended up, did he end up doing something significant as an actual job, or am I confusing him with somebody else?
I don't know. I might be confusing. I was going to say, I think he became a producer, but I might be thinking of someone else.
I know somebody who got pulled over by Ken Osmond when he was with the LAPD. So he was just speeding along, you know, the 405 or whatever, and, you know, and he gets pulled over by, you know, and the cop comes up and, you know, "Hey there, Sonny Jim, let me see your license," or whatever. And he looks up and he said it was just the weirdest thing. It was like the long stare and the lock of the eyes. And he wasn't quite sure, like he was putting it together in his head, like, "I think I'm being pulled over by somebody, you know, who's, I'm a cop. Okay, it is a cop. He looks really familiar. Who is it?" And then he's going through the mental Rolodex. And then he puts it all together in his head somehow that he's being pulled over by the guy who played Eddie Haskell. And he said that time was just slowing down in his head while he was trying to figure out whether he could comment on it or not. And then he never did. Because by the time he decided he was going to ask about it, like Ken Osmond had gone back to his car and come back and said, "Well, you know, get that taillight fixed," or whatever, and shoot him on his way. But it's got to be a surreal experience.
Yeah.
It's like, what's his name? Is it the what's his guts from the DeFranco family ended up being like a paramedic or something, right?
Well, no, Bobby Sherman.
Was it Bobby Sherman?
Yeah, he became an EMT.
Yeah. I mean, that's a strange thing. You're sitting there getting ready to shuffle off your motor coil and Bobby Sherman is giving you CPR.
Well, Steven Seagal has that show now where he's running around with, I don't know with who, but it's called Steven Seagal, Lawman.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's got to be creepy, because even if you are like a complete idiot and you're a criminal, you're going to recognize Steven Seagal.
Well, it'd be like looking down, you know, if you're standing off at the police and Chuck Norris is on your front lawn or whatever. I mean, you just, at that point, you got to figure that you're screwed one way or the other, because, you know, even if he's not really a badass, the cops are definitely going to sit and, you know, they're going to look the other way and divert traffic while he just, you know, kicks you in the spine for a while. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. And we want to welcome yet another proud partner in business, a partner in interstellar commerce here at Legion of News. And that is CJ's High Climbing Service. Here's the reason you want to know about these guys, because if your house is anything like mine, and this is normally where I would say, like, I pray for your sake, it is not. But here's it is, because everybody's house. And I was talking to Gary Kellogg. I've been emailing back and forth about this. He's the guy who operates CJ's High Climbing Services. There's something in the design of rain gutters. You know, it's like where they're supposed to bring the water along as it comes down off the house, and then it's supposed to siphon out, and it's supposed to end up like in the street or down the road. or someplace friendly where dolphins live or something. But it never, ever does. I don't know how it is that the universe does this, but leaves always gather in your drain spouts at exactly the spot directly above your front porch. So when you're leaving the house, you got to go through some weird TLC-style waterfall to get down the steps into your car. And I thought it was just me that he actually mentioned that, too. It's like everybody, there's some sort of planned obsolescence happening with houses. Where it's like, you know, it rains and then the leaves come down as soon as October hits, and then it just starts to clog up, and it just creates this cascading sheet of water that you have to navigate. It just like some sort of, like Aquarius gauntlet to get out of your house. You know, and then the only other alternative is like, well, I guess I'll climb up on the roof myself, because that's a great idea. Because, you know, you really want to be climbing up on the roof after it's been raining and when everything is slick with leaves. It just seems like an invitation to danger and failure of the most painful and grievous nature. So you don't want to have any part of that. You want to contact CJ's High Climbing Services. That is CJ's, C-J-S, CJsHighClimbing.com or 503-228-9278. That is 503-228-9278. And he actually describes what they do as maintenance jobs that are, and I'm quoting here, dangerous, messy, or unpleasant. You know, which is everything from like gutter cleaning and roof cleaning to like,
Do they do the thing where they take the horrible moss off?
I was just going to say you get that like moss that it seems like it's moss, but it's like a sort of soft, pillowy moss.
Yeah.
That, you know, can't be removed by human hands.
And as an ex-homeowner, I can say you have to get that crap removed because it will grow underneath your roof tiles, and then you will get holes in your roof, and then your roof is leaking.
No, and then you're just Jordy Verrill, where you just wake up one day and you're just covered in plants and you have to take a shotgun, to yourself. And you don't, you know, and that's, you know, that things shouldn't get to that level. The other thing about CJ's High Climbing Service, and we'll talk a lot more about them in the weeks to come, is I'm sure that your cousin Bill, who has a lot of experience dealing with this sort of thing because he used to live up there in Saskatchewan, I'm sure he's a great guy. Or I'm sure that, like, whatever the dude on Craigslist is, you know, who's offering to come, like, clean your house, you know, no problem. He'll do any job, you know, doesn't matter what it is, and it's $15.
Possibly naked.
Yeah. Here's what's not included in that $15. It's like the $9 million you're going to have to pay him when he falls off your roof, and lands on the sidewalk. I don't mean to be morbid, but if somebody from CJ's High Climbing falls off your roof and lands on the sidewalk, how can I put this? That's their problem and not yours.
Because, I am assuming he is bonded.
Yes, they are indeed. They are employed by everybody who works there. These guys, Sean, Bo, Lauren, any of the crew, they're actually employed by CJ's. So they're covered by workers' comp, and they're covered by liability insurance. It means you don't have to worry about it. They slip on the sidewalk or just, you know, whatever. They're pulling on the rain gutter, and then suddenly your kid's baseball's been in there, and it falls down, and it hits a guy, and he falls out of a ladder, lands on a thing, and he hits a guy's lunchbox, and the next thing you know, his V15 vertebra all out of whack. You don't have to deal with that.
Of course, they are professionals, so odds are that will not happen.
No, but I'm just saying, in the sort of, I'm just saying, in the endless Peter Sellers film that plays in my head, because that's why I don't do it, right? Because it's the same reason you probably said, you know, I guess I could get up there on the roof and fix it myself. And you looked at it for 3 or 4 seconds and you thought, no. And then you just went back inside.
Right.
So I'm going to give you this number. It is 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278 or CJ's High Climbing. .com. That is CJsHighClimbing.com. Whether it's gutter cleaning, roof cleaning, pressure washing, dealing with moss and algae, anything like that, we'll be talking more about them. That is CJsHighClimbing.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The Big Bang Theory actor Johnny Galecki has signed on to the Justin Timberlake movie I'm Immortal. The movie, set in the near future, centers on a world where the aging gene has become extinct, but people will have to pay for every extra year of their life once they reach 25. The picture also stars House's Olivia Wilde and Amanda Seyfried.
Who is Olivia Wilde?
She's not
Cameron.
No, she's 13.
Okay, House. I dig her. Yeah. I like her.
Peter Jackson will direct The Hobbit, with production expected to start February 2011. Jackson, who helmed the Lord of the Rings trilogy, is taking over for Guillermo del Toro.
Now, are they doing one movie or are they doing two?
I think they're just doing one.
Okay, because that was the other big debate. It was like first he was going to do it, then he wasn't. Then it was Guillermo del Toro. Then it wasn't. Then it was some other guy. Then they were doing two separate movies, and then they were doing one movie, but the studio was going to split it like they're doing with Harry Potter, so they can try to wring the last little bit of geek lucre out. And so, but now I don't even know.
I don't know either. But
all right.
I was kind of looking forward to see what Guillermo del Toro would do with it because I love him.
Yeah, there's something to be said for all the movies having a consistent look.
Yeah,
for there being a sort of certain tones you can because then they can do the inevitable money grubbing box set collection. Jesus, bad enough that they got me to buy all the Lord of the Rings movies like 5 times. I mean, because I got all the Lord of the Rings films, and then they came up with the ultimate directors. Do you realize? I'm not even talking about bonus features now. I mean, just the actual films themselves. If I were just to sit at home and watch Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King, again, I'm not talking about commentary, featurette, just the actual films. I mean, it's like 14 and a half hours.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I calculated one time that I still have not made it through all of the various whatever, because I figured out that if I were to watch all of the extras and all, if I were to absorb somehow all of the content from my Lord of the Rings box set, including commentaries, it was something like 195 hours worth. I mean, it's just insane.
I was lucky in that the first two of those I was writing for the DVD Journal at the time, and so I got them for free and then reviewed the DVDs. So, they kept bringing them out in the different formats and stuff like that. Those reviews, by the way, still available online, DVDJournal.com.
Are we still in entertainment news?
We are, because right. I wanted to mention that 58-year-old actor Simon McCorkindale, who starred in the 1980s TV series Manimal and Falcon Crest, died from cancer Thursday evening.
Really?
McCorkindale, who was diagnosed with bowel cancer in 2006, also starred in the BBC series Casualty. No one could have fought this disease any harder than he did since being diagnosed 4 years ago, said his wife, actress Susan George. He fought it with such strength, courage, and belief.
He fought like a tiger, then a panther, then a chimpanzee, then a baboon, then a paramecium, then an eagle.
Okay, that's all the entertainment.
Okay, come on, but admit that it was,
That was funny.
That was, the death was almost worth it just so I could get to that joke. All right, there you go. There's your entertainment news. All right. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk. Don't forget, by the way, the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. Corpse Watch on the way. Snuff Watch coming up today. We'll do our recap of last night's season finale of Mad Men. We'll also talk about last night's Eastbound and Down. And we'll have the Week in Geek for Mr. Aaron Duran. Here is Don Taylor.
Former U.S. Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders supports the legalization of marijuana for adults. She told CNN Sunday it should be taxed.
This is the thing that we should do rather than grabbing up young people, throwing them in prison. They lose their opportunity to ever get a federal scholarship.
Elder said Sunday the drug isn't physically addictive and money is wasted in combating the sale and possession of the drug.
We criminalize young people and we use so many of our excellent resources, police resources, for things that's really not causing us any problem.
Here's the thing. When I saw the headline this morning, I didn't even know who it was. It just said, former Surgeon General advocates decriminalization of marijuana, which I understand that's what we have to say. That people can't just say, like, legalize or whatever. They have to say decriminalize. But I didn't even have to look to see who it was. I knew just without even looking at anything else, it was Jocelyn Elders, because she's the same one. She was all about teaching kids how to like digitally to manipulate their genitals or whatever. She was the one who was talking about the masturbation class, which was sort of awesome. Back in, I don't know, whenever that was, 93, 94, and I think that she was very obviously, there was a thinly veiled representation of Jocelyn Elders in the person of Mary Kay Place on the West Wing. I always feel bad when somebody who is a doctor who spent their entire life, got like 70 years of school or something, and then just have to sit there in front of Congress like a jackass and just lie and go, no, marijuana's terrible, it's awful, it's just like heroin. And then they just sit and look at their shoes and feel sad.
Yeah, abstinence education is awesome.
It's exactly what we should do. Condoms are crap.
Just tell them never to touch anything below the waist ever. That'll fix it.
Hey, whatever happened to C. Everett Koop? Him and his weird Amish beard and his like and his and his like, you know, like he was the admiral of the of the Yamato. You know, he had that whole like thing with the gold. What are those things? Epaulets or
epaulets?
Yeah, but he had that and like the gold rope and the weird metals, and he looked like a crazy guy.
Yeah.
He looked like a guy who'd just come from like a reenactment party where they were doing Shackleton's Antarctic voyage.
Can't remember his name. He looked like I always imagine that fellow who proclaimed himself Emperor Norton.
Yes,
proclaimed himself Emperor
well
of
done.
San Francisco.
Good reference.
Thank you.
This is Legion of News, brought to you by, among other people, Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com. They are a Spanish language class for adults, no more than 8 folks to a class, and you can do some learning with those other folks. I wonder if there's like a Spanish language version of that, where you do the, like, where like a Spanish politicians, if there's a letter that they drop and add an apostrophe so they can sound folksy. We should find out. When I start taking the class, which I believe is going to be like next month or something, I'll let you know. So it is a Spanish language class. It's for adults, no more than 8 people, and they can adjust to whatever your schedule or level of Spanish acumen might be. Find out more at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. That's the website for the Castalia Language Center. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News, which comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network from noon until 1 p.m. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and of course, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com, where you can enjoy more of our merriment for the low, low price of just 32 cents a day. We will see you again tomorrow at noon. Thank you for listening to Legion of News. Have a fantastic day, won't you?